Hey, it's Talknosis, and we've got an extra special, super awesome, I'm going to say special a couple more times, guest. It's Bea Skolnick. You know her as one of the hosts. And hey, it's Jason. But, you know, Bea's got a brand new book that just came out, I think, literally yesterday. Definitely a show that we are not neglectful about, that we definitely shouldn't have done a long time ago. And a book that both Jason and I have read. We're going to read it. Do you narrate the audiobook, by the way?
I do narrate the audio.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, you got such a great voice, you got such a great presence, so that's probably how I'll read it, because there's so many books, B. There's so many books. But we are talking about The Witch's Book of Numbers, Enhance Your Magic with Numerology. We're always telling you, hey, I just said there's too many books. I haven't read this one yet, but I'm going to. I actually do have the audiobook loaded up. You know, it's if I read it before the show, like, then, you know, that's boring, right? Because I want to learn about it from you, right from the source.
Yeah, you got to get a primer for it.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we're always interviewing people about books on the show, and people out there listening, watching, you can only read, you only have so much time, you can only read so many books, but stop what you're doing, go out and buy this one, right? Or get it as an audiobook. So we'll just dive right into it. Oh, wait, we won't dive right into it because we'll start off with a plug, RebeccaSkolnick.com. If you go there, she has a link. There's also RebeccaSkolnick.com/the-witches-book-of-numbers. But if you just go to RebeccaSkolnick.com, you can get it there. So
it'll be very obvious, I promise. Yeah. You. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do a quick aside here and wonder how often anybody has ever stopped to type in a URL based on what they're hearing in a podcast. Like, has anybody ever went to, like,
this might be the first time, because Everybody listening and watching are like, wait, they're hitting pause, they're typing that in, they're putting in the dash.
If I had a nickel for every time I've said, I'll link it in the show notes, I could produce my own podcast forever.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'd be rich. But you know what? We're going to link it in the show notes. So
perfect. Yes. Good and time. Also, as my publisher would remind you, book sales are a marathon, not a sprint. So any timing is good timing to talk about a book. It's out there. It's living its own life. And it's about as old as your baby now. So you've had good reason to be a little busy.
Yeah, precisely.
And, you know, to that point, too, we don't know when people are going to be listening to this. People might be going through our back episodes after finding us 10 years from now. And then they're going to be like, oh, hey, I'm going to find this book.
There you go. Yeah, mm-hmm. Someone reached out to me from Ireland and said they found my book in a bookstore there. And I had no idea that it was even available overseas, let alone actually being carried in bookstores. So I have no idea what this book is doing or when. So perfect timing.
Excellent.
So let's start with an easy question. Hey, B, what is numerology?
I like this question. So numerology, the way that I define numerology, is a bit of a twofold practice. So on the one hand, numerology is the ancient, and you can put quotes around the word ancient, since we know that most of what we refer to as ancient is pretty recent in terms of time and history. But it's the study of the divine language of numbers. So back when the Greeks and the Egyptians were all playing around in their own sandboxes, there was very little separation between the mystical and the practical. You could go to school and learn to be both a scientist and a priest in the same kind of curriculum. And so numbers were obviously seen as in mathematics and as scientific tools, but they also had this divine code that mystics loved to dig into. And they saw it as the language with which that which they called God wrote the world or the universe. And so getting to know this code and getting to know this language brought them into deeper connection with the divine. So on the one hand, it's the study. You can actually study these numbers. You can work with them and learn their energies. And then the second part is the intuitive application of that information onto people, places, or collective events. So if you are interested in astrology or any of those other arcanic tools, tongue in cheek, archonic tools. Just like everyone has their own kind of unique natal or astrology chart, everyone also has their own unique numerology chart. So the book goes into both kind of the practice of numerology as a whole and a lot of information and ways to use the numbers, but it also teaches you, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit, how to find out some numbers that are at you, your core, your personal core, and then how you can use that information to further understand yourself.
Cool. And how did you get into it?
Numerology was actually one of the first kind of witchy practices that I got into. My mom had my chart done by a sidewalk mystic in Northern California who's still there. He just sits on the sidewalk with a little sign that says, like, let me do your numbers. And it was awesome. And I thought it was so interesting. And the book actually starts with a story of me getting in a fight with my mom over needing to go to tutoring for Algebra 2. So I'm very upfront with the fact that the idea that I'm teaching anyone anything to do with numbers is a huge cosmic joke. And so if I can do it, you can do it as well. But it really kind of was the first time that I saw numbers as anything other than like scary mathematics that I didn't understand. And so I personally was just really interested in how I could use them differently or what other kind of angles I could see them through, other lenses. And so the book is really kind of a collection of a decade of study. As both of you read it and whoever is listening, you'll find that it's about much, much more than numerology and that a lot of these kind of esoteric or mystical tools really do speak with one another. And so I've given you tarot associations and astrology associations. All of the numbers have their own chapters full of myth and legend and historical figures. So it's a fun kind of mishmash of a lot of things.
Yeah. Mm. Can you tell us like about the book, like how it came to be about and, you know, why you wrote it, like the motivation?
Yeah. So in the pandemic, really kind of in 2020, when it all started, I've been reading tarot personally for almost 15 years now, which is a crazy number that I don't want to think about. but kind of not professionally, but I was being more open about it. And for a while I had an Instagram. And so a lot of people knew that that was part of my life and my practice. And so when the pandemic started, I started doing collective tarot readings on my Instagram and kind of started to find other like-minded individuals who were running tarot accounts or talking about things. And then kind of witchcraft or spirituality as a whole, but really witchcraft became like really trendy really fast. Yeah. And so everyone was kind of talking about it. And I realized that I had all this information about numerology, but I didn't see it really being spoken about at all. And so there was like a little bit of a strategic niche where I was like, okay, if I'm talking about this that has to do with these other things, then maybe that will help me to not break through, but you know, it's something different on the scene a little bit, just to be transparent. And people were really interested in the information. So I started teaching classes. I wrote a little zine online that I gave away for free for anybody who wanted to learn more. I started working with clients, doing chart readings, you know, calculating people's personal numerology charts and like digging into it with them. And then I do have to say it was a little bit of a magical moment. A publisher actually reached out to me and asked me if there was a book project in this work. And I'm a fan of saying yes and learning how to do things later. So we took about 3 or 4 months going back and forth, kind of getting this proposal together, because a lot of nonfiction you can sell on just a proposal, but that usually is done by the author or by the author and their representation before it goes to publishers. So it was a little non-traditional in that I did that whole process with them. So it was very important to them that witchcraft play a very active role in, which it hadn't in my work before, just in terms of I had the classes I was teaching had not married the two topics, but they really wanted to talk about the intersection between witchcraft and numerology. So it grew from there. And now every number has spells or rituals that I have either created or adapted or borrowed, and, you know, with credit, obviously. And so with each number, there are many, many ways to get witchy with it as well, if that's something you're interested in.
Jason, before I barrel on with the question sheet, do you have anything to add, to ask, to interject, to threads to pull on?
Well, maybe some of them might come up a little later. But I guess one thing that, like, so this is a lot of stuff that you've pulled together, and like you've threaded things through, like you've tried to kind of encapsulate like stuff that you've been thinking about for like a long time, and also versus like over the pandemic realizing there was an opportunity. Maybe I'll essentially ask one of the questions we've already set up, but then add to it, is that like not all numerological systems are made to work together.
Correct.
So how do you decide what to use? But also, have you almost created like the Skolnick system here, like in terms of a possible approach for these intersecting systems?
Maybe one day we'll just let the universe work on that one. No, so you're absolutely right. Since it is still a historical and present tense school of thought, there are different numerological systems. Not all cultures use the same numbers or number systems. So it is very important when you're approaching numerology that you at least understand what system you're working in. And then, of course, I love to pick and choose, but I know some people don't and kind of frown on that behavior. So I offer a lot of different options, but the book and my practice is really based in Pythagorean numerology. So there, that obviously comes from Pythagoras, who was a Greek who studied in Egypt. And so a lot of, I'm very passionate about kind of reconnecting those lines of study as well, because they have been erased historically. So, you know, the Greeks didn't just pop up and know all of this stuff. They learned it somewhere too. So mine is Pythagorean or Greek numerology, which is still very much used primarily in the Western world. But there's also Chaldean numerology, which is very different and only uses the numbers 1 through 8 instead of Pythagorean uses 0 through 9, like the building block numbers. And then you grow on that. And Chaldean numerology is still used today. I've read many books on it. And it's a really interesting system. It comes from Babylon. And then Chinese numerology is also very much practiced today. It was even on one of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills talked about Chinese numerology on her first episode a couple years ago, which I thought was very funny. So there are absolutely different systems. And so I tell my students, and I hope I say this in the book, but I tell my students that if you're out there Googling, you might find information that conflicts with what I'm sharing in the class, and that just has to be okay, you know, since there are living, breathing systems. So I just try and stick with my system as much as possible, like what's out there. And but no Skolnick system yet. It's very much okay. Pythagoras.
Fair.
Yeah.
That was me kind of segueing into your question, John. Did you have anything else on that you wanted to ask about?
No. So I was going to segue into the next question, which is, what can numerology teach us about ourselves, B?
Yeah. So I know this is on the list too. My kind of signature chart reading is called the Significant Six. There's a whole chapter in the book that goes over the Significant Six and how to find it. And I see these as the six numbers that can really help to start to show you the snapshot of who you are or what has been like offered to you in this life. And it starts with three numbers, which I do cheekily refer to as the Holy Trinity. And it's your life path number, your public persona number, and your yearly cycle number. And these are all calculated from your date of birth. So for example, the life path number is probably like the one number that if you're going to learn it, you know, definitely see what is in store for you there. And that is found by adding all of the digits of your birthday up until you get a single digit. So once you get to that double digit number, you just keep adding until you have one number. And so the life path number is like your zoomed out long game perspective of your life. So some folks might not connect with this number or its energy earlier on in their life, because it definitely is something that you grow into. But it's like, you know, what's the overall energy or flavor or archetype of what you're here to tussle with in the world? What are going to be your challenges, your areas of growth? What maybe is energy that kind of comes easily to you and you're just not sure why or what that could be about? It can also be used as a tool to help you really focus in. I mean, maybe you're feeling really lost and getting to know this life path number. You're like, oh yeah, that really points to some skills or some characteristics that I've seen in myself. Or maybe it's even like you can find, I don't supply this, but you could find lists of possible jobs that would be good for someone, you know, on a life path of X. And so there are a lot of ways that you can use this information. And the Holy Trinity altogether, like the life path number is the long game, but then the yearly cycle is all the way zoomed in. So it's the month and the date of your birth plus the year, like the current year. So you would add it this year when we're recording this to 2023. If you're listening to this 10 years down the line in the vault, use whatever year it is for you. And that's kind of the zoomed in perspective. And kind of the cool, like, mathematical magic of numerology is that when you start doing some of these calculations, especially like yearly cycles, there is magic in the math. So you'll do the calculation. So I'll just use myself as an example. My birthday is July 7th, so 7/7. And if I were to add that to 2023, I would get to 21. And then I would add 2 + 1 = 3. So I'm in a 3 year currently. And if I do the math on either side of that 3 with other years, I'll see that it actually does work out that the years go up, you know, through the line, like year one through year 9. And then the next one magically starts over again at 1. So when you calculate your yearly cycles, you're actually calculating chunks or chapters of 9 years of your life. It just works out that way. And then you can pull those 9 year chapters out. And if you want to look at that story or kind of what, you know, Pythagoras has a tool, but there's also a modern tool that kind of looks at these larger chunks of life of like groupings of 9 years. So it's really a fun rabbit hole to go down. And I guess to answer the original question of like, what can numerology tell you about yourself? I think with any tool, it is just kind of interesting information that you then can work with and play with in whatever way brings you into deeper relationship with yourself or with, like in the book, with your magic or with your spirituality or with your God, if that's of interest to you. And then it also has this very kind of practical temporal use of connecting you to like this current moment in time and space and like what energy is happening for you. Like at any given day or year.
Ah, that's interesting. So this might be like, you made a joke earlier about archonic forces. And I think like it is actually like, you know, it's, we need to address the demiurge in the room, you know, like the...
We do. Always.
And like John and I just had recorded a conversation where we were kind of discussing, you know, like a bit of that, the trope of the world-hating Gnostic, you know? And sometimes things like astrology and numerology can feel like they're part of the world that we should be hating, according to some Gnostic interpretations. And so is there like a, like I've got some ideas about how to thread the needle past that. I also have a very open definition of Gnosticism that doesn't require me to specifically hate things that come from the world per se. But yeah, is there like a, do you have a way you, you needle or you thread that needle?
I think my first one, and this is just kind of a personal, like personal ethical statement, I guess, is that I am never here to, I'm here to share. I'm here to teach to a certain extent. I'm here to offer, but I'm not here to like talk anyone into anything or to kind of impress my views upon anyone. And so I think if you are not interested in working with systems like that, then that's fine. But I think that it is an interesting dilemma because you can't really, like, I don't think you believe in astrology or you believe in numerology. It's like that they're both languages. They're both practices or arts that exist, whether or not you want to believe in them. And so, yeah, I guess that's just where my brain went first is like, I'm just here to offer information. But I think that there are quotes from these thinkers who are way smarter than I will ever be, who used this information before it was kind of separated and subjugated by the church. There were these incredible mystics. I mean, Pythagoras, Plato, Kepler, all of these people who really saw these tools as getting them closer to understanding God or to understanding the divine. And so maybe that is also what someone would call the demiurge, like they were getting closer to the demiurge. But I don't want to be that reductive. Like I want to believe that people who are fascinated in about how the world came to be, about how it functions, about what other mysteries and what other explanations might be like behind the veil, you know, so to speak. I just want to believe that they really did feel this information was helping them get closer to that.
Totally. Like the, on one hand, like I think your note about it's, these are things that exist, whether or not you're, you believe in them. I think that's a good way to put it. Like it's almost like you might be a world hating Gnostic, but if it's raining, you should still take an umbrella, you know?
Like, well, so my main thing about astrology, if, and again, like I'm not interested in changing anyone's mind about things, but I say like the moon controls the tides, and that is just a fact. We know that about this world, that the moon's movements control the ocean tides, and we are made of 80% water. So how dare we think that the moon would not have any kind of effect on us if it has effects on the oceans, which are much larger than us. So again, I don't think you need to necessarily know the information or pay attention to the information if it goes against everything that you stand for. But I do think it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious about your ideas, though, about threading the needle.
John, do you have any thoughts on that?
Not really. You know, it's something that I'm open to where, like, of course, you know, numerology, numbers are an important aspect of understanding reality, right? And you know, there's a debate within mathematics: are numbers? It sounds like a very strange debate when you sort of phrase it. But are numbers something that the humans created to for us to help understand as a tool, or are numbers programmed into reality, right? And there are scientists and physicists who make the argument that math and numbers are programmed into reality itself. So I think that, you know, understanding that, you want to understand the reality that we live in. And if you are some sort of world-hating Gnostic, you know, you're not going to escape the prison without understanding how the prison works, right? Like, you know, if you want to make a jailbreak, you're going to need a map. That said, you know, the world-hating Gnostic trope, I have some issues with it, right?
May my book be your spoon to dig yourself out.
precisely. It's
a whole new marketing campaign.
to my next question, which is, you know, this is something Jason and I have talked about a lot, where, you know, some of this esoteric stuff, it's been explained to me as a trick for you to, particularly sort of kind of capitalistic speculation, which we'll come back to, is a trick for you to understand that, that everything is interconnected and you are interconnected, right? I'm wondering if you can explain, how numerology can help us understand how things are connected and how we are interconnected.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I think I actually like the language of it's a trick, because I do find it very funny that a part of this human experience does seem, I mean, obviously I don't have to say this to your audience, but does seem to be this ignorance or this forgetfulness that, you know, once we arrive here, we have forgotten everything that comes before. We don't see ourselves clearly in the landscape of everything else. And so that our spiritual journey here is a lot of remembering who and what we are. And this is very Lion King now, but, kind of re-piecing all of this information together. And I think that numerology is really interesting because, like you've already brought up, numbers, aside from the debate, they are used by kind of every person uses numbers to some extent, whether that's just a handle on social media, if you throw some numbers, if it's just your birthday, if you're very into mathematics. I think numbers are kind of one of those truly universal systems that everyone touches at least once in their life, even if you speak different languages or to a certain extent, you could use different numbers, but In the present world, numbers have kind of they've systematically been agreed upon to a certain extent. Mm. But I do find that in terms of more esoteric study, like the number energy, first of all, kind of feels, at least for me and for a lot of people that I've worked with, there does seem to be this recognition that, like, once you kind of get to know them, you're like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the things that I have been able, and I always use intuitive application when I talk about this, because I do use a lot of myself as my own channel. The number of times I've said something to someone just based on a number and they've been like, how did you know that, is kind of wild. Like, there does seem to be this really mystical experience with numbers. But then there is this through line between all of these other kind of esoteric systems. So like, if you're a Jesus fan, you can even kind of get into the numerology of of Jesus. Like, 33 is this master number that has been attributed to Jesus, but it's also like 33 is a huge number in Vedic religions, is a huge number in certain pantheons. So you'll start to see that these numbers really do, it's like pattern recognition kind of in all of these mythological schools of thought. So I don't exactly know how. I just know that the more I study it, the more it just seems to be all in the same soup.
I have a question actually for both of you, and B, go first because it's more for you. But it's something that Jason and I talk a lot about. And sorry, I didn't put it on the sheet, but things bubble up, even though this is a common refrain. So we take our name, we look for patterns, we look at our birthdays, we use numbers to understand, have a deeper understanding of ourselves and reality. But I'm wondering, I think of numerology became, and probably still is, I've been, for my own sanity, not looking at it lately, but like QAnon, right? They got really into really elaborate numerology.
So unfortunately, they did.
Mm. Yeah. And it's when I say elaborate, I mean, this puts gematria or any other system to shame. So I'm wondering how do you have any advice for how we don't lose our minds, how we don't go insane, applying numerology to things?
Yeah. it's funny, right? Cause the tool is a tool, and then whoever's using the tool is going to bring themselves to the tool. And so we don't get to say, you don't get to use the tool. So I, for my own sanity, have not gone down many of the QAnon numerological rabbit holes, although I have read some information that I It's like, oh, someone thought about that for a long time. So I can't tell you whether or not I would actually like agree with anything that's coming out of that line of thinking or what calculations they've done. But I have to hold a very strong like foundation of this could be everything or it could be nothing.
Yeah.
I think, I am very discerning when it comes to these spiritual tools. And I've had so many times when I've had my own, where I've calculated my own numbers for something. And I'm like, either that doesn't resonate with me or I truly don't know what this is supposed to mean, you know, and then I put it down and maybe I'll never know. So it's not a tried and true, I don't think. I think numerology is very much like astrology in that it's a contextual language that you have to speak, that it's not just like, oh, the number four means this. And so therefore you are that. It's very much like, here are the energies that four speaks to. Here are the topics or the themes and how do those present in your life? So it very much like is a conversation that really heavily relies on context. And so to go back to the QAnon, you know, that's not a context that I'm interested in seeing the world through. And so I don't know how much that would resonate with me. But I also, I don't know. I mean, it gets very National Treasure for me. If anyone's seen that Nicolas Cage movie, like where there is this secret code. And so, yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I know that there, I'm very fascinated by gematria in when it's used in religious context to try and decipher like secret messages within a holy text. I'm very fascinated in that, but I can't say that I've done any of that or seen any success with that by myself.
Yeah. Jason, do you have any thoughts on that topic? Oh, sorry. You're already talking. Good.
No, that's great. Yeah. I agree with everything that B is saying there. There's like a few thoughts that came to mind. Like I joked earlier that like, you know, the systems exist, whether or not you believe in them. So it's like a sense of the, you know, if it's raining, you should probably take an umbrella, whether or not you believe in the rain, you know? but the other part of that is that with weather reports, it's always a chance of rain. They can never definitively say 100% it's going to happen. This is going to happen in this place this way. And I think that's a useful way to talk about it because, like kind of to your point, B, like say four generally means this, but it doesn't always mean this to everybody the exact same way. You know, that's kind of it's the chance of rain, not the exact prediction of rain, you know. That's kind of a like a way to say it there. And then like the other thing is when it comes to a lot of this stuff, like people have probably heard me talk on the show before about like a lot of my approach to Gnosticism is about trying to experience an ineffable thing and then trying to F the ineffable to verbally and contextually express something that defies expression. And I think like numerology, astrology, like Christianity, all of these are like have been attempts that have to express these things, and all of them are going to be insufficient in the sense that they are trying to express an inexpressible. You know, they're always going to be lacking something. So where that kind of goes to for me with most systems is it true, but is it useful? You know, is it helping me? Is it helping others? Is it helping? And by helping, I don't just mean like validating what I want to be true, but like, you know, making sure I'm living a healthy life, that I'm remaining connected with my family and friends, that I'm connected with my community, like versus being, say, disconnected, held away, closed away. And that becomes, I think, a useful rubric for most systems, including like QAnon, like, you know, kind of going like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe you've proved whatever it is you think you've proved, but that proof means that I have to stop talking to my friends and I have to stop, you know, shopping at a certain store or whatever. Like, these feel like disconnections. And so then that makes it less useful. you know? And I think like the other thing, like even Gematria, like this might annoy some of the Thelemites who may listen to this, but like one of the things that annoys me when reading like Aleister Crowley stuff is that he'll often be like, well, here's this incredibly interesting theory, and I've proved it by using Gematria on these words or these names of these places I went to when I did this thing. And so therefore, and I'm like, you know, I was with you right up until that. Like I was with you right up until that was your proof, like, or that's your underlying reason why it's true. And I was just like, it could have been true or it could have been useful on its own, you know, before you proved it, if that makes sense. And so I think that's maybe if there's an archonic side of any of this, it's the assumption that because it's numbers, it can be proved, if that makes mm-hmm. has to be true. Yeah. Maybe that's a rambling way around what you were asking there, John.
No, it's great. This is the ramble show. We encourage rambling. So,
have you heard anything I've said already? I think you're fine.
Hey, B, what's a magic square?
Oh my gosh, the magic square is actually really cool. So the magic square is a tool. So under the umbrella of numerology, there's all these different ways that you can use it and different tips and tricks. And so the magic square is a Pythagorean tool that was actually, if you want to talk about something that you can't explain or can't prove, this idea of magical squares or mathematical squares. So I should back up. The magic square, if you're just looking at it, is a 3x3 square. So 9 total boxes. And if you filled it in completely from bottom to top, it would go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So it gets all of your building block integers in there. And so the idea of a square that is filled with numbers and all can be calculated in these cool and crazy ways was actually something that popped up in many regions of the world kind of around the same time. So there's no real way to know which one came first or what was informed by what. But we do know from other accounts that like ideas will pop up or you'll see the same movies come out in the same year, you know. So I love kind of the magic of where this inspiration came from. So you can do a lot of, I put some of it in the book, and then you can do more research on kind of magical squares as a whole. But the magic square that I teach in the book is a Pythagorean tool that you put the digits of your birthday into the square. So for example, my birthday of 7/7, I would just have 2 sevens down in the bottom right-hand corner of my square. And then I would put in the year. So you just account for each digit of your birthday kind of within the square. And then the square can be read in many different ways. It can be read in columns, like 1, 2, 3. That is the column of thoughts. It's a very individual column. It's like, you know, 1 being I think, then 2 being I'm connecting my dots. And then 3 is maybe I'll speak it aloud or I'll write it down or I'll share it with someone. So this shows like a thought process. 4, 5, 6 being this column of will, you know, what do I do then after my thought? How do I put that into action? How are my ideas being tested or tried? How am I kind of reorganizing my thoughts? And then finally, that third column of 7, 8, 9 is action. Then like, how do I put that out into the world? So we're building through the story 1 through 9, going from like a very individual experience to 9 being a very collective experience, or 1 being the start and 9 being the end. You can also read it as rows, and that's actually like quality of energy. So there's mental numbers, there's emotional numbers, there's practical numbers. You can read the Pythagorean arrows, which means once you fill in your square, if you have any completed rows or columns where you have all the numbers accounted for, that means different things. So I take you through all of those. But I also find that kind of what the square offers you is a different way of looking at groupings of numbers. So even if you're taking it kind of outside of yourself, like I I like to look at magic squares whenever I have like a couple or collaborators or someone asking about some kind of compatibility or collaboration, because the number energies, it's like if you have a person who's all their numbers are up in their mind and they're very logical and they're coming to everything using their intelligence or their smarts and saying, this is what I think about this. But then they're working with someone whose numbers are all in the body and they feel very intensely and they're like, I don't know, that doesn't feel right. Or like, this is what feels good to me. Then that's just a different way of approaching like the same task. And so I find that it can create understanding where if I have this notion or this knowledge that, oh, I process things very emotionally, but Jason processes things very logically, then when we come up to a struggle or an issue, then it's like, oh, right. Cause yeah, he thinks about things differently than I do. So yeah, I think it's just, again, these tools that can really help us to understand not only ourselves, but then we can gain insights into our relationships with others and how we might come to them a little easier based on that information.
Cool. Very cool. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if I fill all of my numbers in the magic square, does that mean I achieve gnosis?
Well, there are very few birthdays that will incorporate every single number in the square. So the idea, no. I know, right? And like, how can we achieve gnosis through numerology? That would be a good question for a smarter mind than mine.
are there other numerological practices in the book that we haven't talked about?
It's a good question. Oh my gosh. I take you through the significant six. That's all about you. And the other three numbers that we didn't talk about, you know, there's the Holy Trinity that comes from the birthday. The other three numbers come from your name. So that is a more like gematria, like I use the Pythagorean alphabet. It's very easy. A is one, B is two, C is three. When you get to I is nine, you start back over at one, J is one, so on and so forth. It's in the book. Don't worry. And I think names are really interesting because you'll find a lot of kind of traditional numerologists who will say it has to be the birth name. But I think that's really boring in 2023. And so I really impress upon my clients that I want them to come to this using the name that they want to explore. And actually, I know a Chaldean numerologist, so not the same system, but does incredible work. Her name is Novalee Wilder. And one of her main practices is name numerology. So she helps people naming to name things, whether that's people, pets, businesses, themselves, you know, or if they want to change their name, kind of looking at the original name numerology and then what it would change into the name that they want to take on. And so I love that practice. So I think if you're going to use your birth name, that's your inherited blueprint, right? It's what somebody else gave to you or put on you. And then if you're using a name of your choice, it can be really empowering to say, this is the name that I chose for myself. And these are the energies it represents. And I wasn't even aware of that, but how cool that's kind of what I offered, this new sense of self. So I think name numbers are very cool. Other than that, yes. So I take you through each number, and each number has its own rituals, spells, and practices that if you want to get witchy with it, there are tons of different kinds of spells. There's also more just spiritual experiences, like automatic writing is not necessarily a spell, but it is a practice that you can try. Or channeled writing. That's kind of the idea of allowing somebody else to be the pen or something else to be the pen. And then after that, I go through the magic square as a tool. And then I go through a lot of everyday magic. So how you can use numerology in the kitchen, how you can use it when you're brushing your teeth at night, how you can use it to make coffee, to plan things. You know, there are numerological associations with all the days of the week. There are even hourly things if you want to get really wild with it. But it can be really practical for planning. Like if you, three is the number of communication. So you know that you want to do a lot of writing or that you have to give a speech one day, maybe pick a day, you know, if it's in your control, pick a day with a heavy three energy, you'll kind of get like that universal boost. So I think there's a lot in there that people can use in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Well, I think we're just about ready to wrap up. Jason, do you have any closing questions or threads you want to pull on?
Yeah, well, so like you mentioned this earlier about the other, like there's other traditions that are active, like the Chaldean and the like Chinese numerology. Knowing that you're not talking about these from expertise, but is there anything about those systems that you can like maybe note at all to anybody who's wondering about them, like in regards to this? I basically just to touch on them since we're here.
Yeah. So Chaldean is probably the other, like I would say Pythagorean and Chaldean probably have the most overlap because they use similar systems of numbers, even though not all the digits are the same. But some of the number energies of just the building block numbers are pretty similar in Chaldean. But Chinese numerology is really fascinating because the Chinese have this structure of some numbers being lucky or unlucky. And we don't really, in the Western world, we haven't really gone into, maybe you don't have a great experience with one number, but we wouldn't collectively call that number like bad or anything. But the way that they come to the knowledge of whether or not a number is lucky or unlucky has to do with the sound, like the homophones, that the word for the number sounds like other numbers. So for example, we have talked about, I mentioned four. Four is a very unlucky number in Chinese numerology because the word for four sounds like the word for death. So there's like already this superstition around four. And actually a friend of mine was working retail and someone came in and said, I see that you have sets of four. Would you be able to break it open? Could I buy three or five? Because I can't gift this person four. That would be like culturally uncouth of me to gift this person a set of four, which is very funny because in the Western world, a set of four is like very traditional. Like we would definitely buy four. That sounds great. So I find the Chinese system really fascinating.
I think what that also kind of connects to for me, like John was asking or talking earlier there about like, there's some scientists debating whether or not numbers exist, you know? And like some say that they do exist and others say that they like exist externally from people. I mean, and like, which philosophically I'm fascinated by, but what's also interesting to me is that what that really speaks to is something we kind of connected to earlier about like numbers as context and numbers as a way to explore an idea and how like in for that culture, because of their language, because of the words they use for something, it changes how they feel about other things that sound like those things. That's just an interesting, like, it's almost like poetry. Like if there was famous poetry that we loved and then the rhyme became so prominent that anything that sounded anything like that, we also associated, you know, there's kind of an interesting, I'm kind of freestyling here. What was the other thing I was going to mention? Oh, something that you said near the beginning that I think is just interesting is so we've been talking about the value of numbers and how we feel about them. But then you mentioned near the beginning about how you've been reading tarot for 15 years, which is a crazy number that you didn't want to think about. I think that's I couldn't not bring up the fact that that's an interesting phrase to use when we're talking about numerology. That relationship we have to not just like those integers that you're talking about, but the way, like why 15 seems like a problem when it's years, but it's fine. Leaves on a plant. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And even funnier that I said 15 because in the tarot, the 15th card is the devil. So I think there's also some weird stuff in there. But I think what you're talking about is really true and really interesting. There is a new book, maybe I can't remember the name of it now, but somebody's reading it that I know that literally is like, why and what is math, and like, is math real, basically? And so I am really fascinated by the current conversations. But I think with numbers and whether they, you know, how we feel about them or the associations, something that's interesting is that they are, numbers are a collective unit of measurement. And, but even within that, like, we don't all measure time the same way. And I also think that the idea of measuring time is one of those ineffable things that, like, we still don't understand how time works. So to, on a practical and then like a woo-woo level, like practically, if you're going to use current yearly cycle numbers, you have to use the calendar you use. So I would use the Gregorian calendar, but maybe you operate on a Jewish calendar. Maybe you operate on another, so the Gregorian calendar was not even, I think this is in the book, was not even adopted by certain countries until like the last 5-10 years. So it is really wild to kind of think about what we think of as collective and then to realize like, oh, that's not, we don't all use that. So I do think that's why I think the conversation's fascinating, because if you're switching a calendar, you're switching structures, you're getting whole new numbers and all new calculations. Mm-hmm. So that's very practical. On the woo-woo side, if you're thinking about like how we measure time, there are two new studies that are really interesting to me. The first is that they've done more, researchers are looking into our personal perceptions of time being connected to our heartbeats. So they're looking at this in terms of mental health and especially ADHD or anxiety, which people who navigate those illnesses, including myself, like we have different perceptions of time than other people. If you get lost in something and you come out of 5 years later and you're like, oh my gosh, like, and it's actually only been 20 minutes. But it has to do with like the speed of your heartbeat actually affects your perception of time, which is really interesting. And then the other one is that they have been studying quasars, like universal quasars and light. And from the birth of the universe until now, scientists think that time has actually sped up by 1/5.
Wow.
So even in that, like they say that looking at some of these long ago light sources that are dead now, but we're still seeing the light, they're actually running like slow-mo movies because speed, like time didn't move as fast when that light first came. I can't even explain this to you, but I'm fascinated.
Yeah, so, and time moves differently due to gravity as well. So if you're at the very top of a high mountain, it's going to be by, you know, fractions of a millisecond of a fraction, but time is going to be different from you at the top of the mountain than people at the bottom of the mountain, right? Yeah. And of course, you know, yeah. Einstein talking about moving at the speed of light, time is going to be different. Whoa, man. Sorry,
No, that's it though. But it just, yeah. I think the reason that this is coming up is because we were talking, you know, and to like get us back into good old Gnosticism, like we were asking about this system, if it's archonic or the demiurge in the room. And I think that to me seems to be about authority and control. And so if you're using this as a tool to understand, not as a system that's telling you something, like it's not prescribing you something about yourself. But I think like all of these ideas of like, we're never really going to understand it anyway. So we're kind of just getting closer or peeking through the curtain or chipping away at something is just important to my kind of personal ethos whenever I'm teaching this information.
Mm. There's one thing that this makes me think of is how so many fairy stories involve lost time. So figures who encounter a supernatural experience and maybe go to a different place or what have you, come back and they've lost decades, you know. And even to bring it back to like relativistic physics, Interstellar involves that. Like they go through a wormhole, they go down to planets that end up eating up a bunch of time. Like, so they go through more time than in the real world or on Earth than they experience, which to me means that Interstellar is a fairy story.
Great.
They go into a fairy circle, they come back out.
Is that the next episode of Pop Gnosis?
Might be.
Willie, I don't know. I think Barbie is next. I like your idea of Barbie.
Yeah, it's got to be Barbie.
Yeah. Barbie is next, yeah. Well, I mean, now we've promised it on the show, so now we have to do it. But yeah, that's it for me, John.
Yeah. Well, everybody, go to RebeccaSkolnick.com, buy the book, get the book and the audiobook. Rebecca won't make this promise, but Talk Gnosis will. Buy the book, and you can use numerology to win the lottery. So guaranteed, if you don't win the lottery for some reason, just email jason@gnosticwisdom.net. And we, that our complaints department. And I
need to check that email.
Yeah, I also I'm going to earn my 5 cents and put these links in the show notes. And talking about money, after you win the lottery, go to paypal.com/Gnostic for as little as a dollar per piece of media per month. You can help keep the show going. We don't give you anything in return, but that's because we don't want to lock stuff up behind a paywall. So we're always trying to think of things that we can do. If you have ideas, feel free to email us. If you want me or Jason to go over to your house and do your dishes, we'll do it. We might have some stuff coming down the pipeline. I've been saying that for a while, but I have some ideas. You do get early access to the shows when I remember to send it out, but you get to do a good thing and help us keep the show going. You can do paypal.me/Gnostic for one-time donations. And I think that's it. So RebeccaSkolnick.com. And B, thanks so much for coming on. Sorry that we took so long to do this, and I'm looking forward to hearing your delightful voice in my ears reading this book to me.
Thank you so much for the support. I just really genuinely appreciate the both of you so much, and the fact that you would even want to talk to me about this is great. So thanks everyone for listening and for keeping open minds, obviously.
Okay, bye everybody.
Bye
bye.